This program is a proud member of UniVoz. Unified, unique voices. Learn more at UniVozPods.net.
Hello, my name's Patrick, and I'm a Scream Queen. I'm a Scream Queen,
and so are you!
Hello again, my beautiful screamers, and welcome to another episode of Scream Queens. It's the podcast where horror gets gay. Tonight, well, I'm still on hiatus. I'm still in recovery, but I'm not going to leave you high and dry. I am letting you take a little peek behind the Patreon paywall and another episode of Damn You, Uncle Lewis. That is our podcast where we talk about Friday the 13th, the TV series. And this episode that I've picked for you today is a very, very special episode. It's from season 2 and it's called Master of Disguise. Well, Patrick, what's so great about it? Shut up. I'm going to tell you. First of all, it's directed by Tom McLaughlin. Tom McLaughlin, who also directed Friday the 13th, Part 6. And one of my favorite movies, One Dark Night, but mostly he directed Friday the 13th, Part 6. And it has definitely the first and possibly the only gay character in Friday the 13th history. That's the movie or the series, because there ain't no one anywhere else. But there's one in this episode. It's a really fun one. It takes a look at Hollywood behind the scenes with a cursed theatrical makeup case that could make you handsome, make you irresistible, and also make you kill. Like I said, things are doing better. And if you didn't see my video that I posted online, I have started production up again on the show. So yay, things are going very slowly. I have to take baby steps. So things are going to take a little longer than they normally would. I'm working on the They Wait in the Dark episode right now. Again, going very slowly because I still get confused easily, but less confused than I did a month ago. So things are improving, but let's all be patient. And if you have not seen this episode, you're also lucky because it's very much a standalone episode. You don't need to know anything that came before. You don't need to know anything that came in after. So if you want to watch it, it's on YouTube and there's a link right down there in the show notes. Hey, and if you like what you heard, you might want to become a Patreon subscriber because that's the only place you can normally hear Damn You, Uncle Lewis, the Friday the 13th, the series retrospective podcast. So for just $5 a month, you can unlock 2.5 seasons of this. Yeah, we're halfway through season 2 over there. You can unlock all those episodes and come join the party over there, as well as all the other good stuff that's happening on Patreon. And you can do that at www.patreon.com/screamqueens. Links down in the show notes. Enough of my babbling. Let's start the show and take a peek in my very curious curio shop. And damn you, Uncle Lewis. Oh, hello. Come in. Come in. Come in. Do come in out of the terrible weather. Oh, welcome. Welcome to my very curious curio shop. Although I hate to inform you, the shop is closed for tonight because it's a rather special evening. It's our monthly meeting of sorts. So unless you're here for the meeting, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. The nature of the meeting, you ask? Let me put it to you this way. Sometimes Uncle Lewis does dreadful things.
Welcome to Damn You, Uncle Lewis, the Friday the 13th, the series, retrospective podcast.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the red carpet of the world premiere of Damn You, Uncle Lewis, the movie. I'm your MC for this evening. I'm Patrick Walsh. I'm out here on the red carpet, and the stars are arriving. Oh, here come the first celebrities coming down the red carpet. I think it is. It's Maya Murphy. Maya Murphy, hello. How are you?
Oh, why, hello there. Just charmed to see you tonight.
Who are you wearing?
It's a very sad video game called Papers, Please.
I like that game.
Who was that? Oh my goodness, is that, could it be? Why not? Could I be mistaken? I don't know. It's Trainin! Trainin, the world famous Trainin!
Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
We're fabulous. Trainin, I have to say, you look amazing. Have you had something done? Did you get work done?
No.
You're still not shiny and covered in weird wet stuff.
No, it's I'm dry.
Oh, you're just not sweating anymore because you don't live in.
I don't live in Houston anymore. I don't sweat anymore. I always stay outside with Bill. I was like, you know what? I haven't sweated at all today. This is amazing.
Fantastic. Let's move inside to the big world premiere of Damn You, Uncle Lewis, the movie. Ha, I fooled you all. This session of the I Hate Uncle Lewis Club will come to order. Order, order, order. Oh, no movie, no nothing.
I thought there was going to be a movie.
There will be a movie, but we're not in it. You would remember making a movie. Anyway, I don't know. It was a terrible intro, but here we are, everybody. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Damn You, Uncle Lewis. We're going to talk about Friday the 13th, the series. I hope we didn't confuse you because I confused myself during that introduction.
I am also confused. Trey, you're driving now.
Oh, shit. We're in trouble now.
I don't like people that dry to drive my vehicle because he might be a mummy. I don't know. Because he's so dry. You're not sweaty. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. But I do have for my lips. We got lip balm.
Good night, everybody.
Trey is bringing back the kissy face pimp, and we can all go home.
We found it at Costco. Fuck it.
Okay.
You found the kissy face pimp at Costco?
Since nobody asked me, I'm fine.
How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm good. I got my COVID bivalent booster yesterday.
Oh, mine gave me a bruise. Want to see?
No. Because we're on an audio podcast and nobody cares. Ew.
That's not true. We have a live studio audience.
That's true.
And he might care.
Yes. So patrons, we have somebody that's taking advantage of the Damn You, Uncle Lewis backstage pass. In the chat, we have the fabulous Jason Anthony.
Hey, Jason.
Oh, he just said hello. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Jason. It's very fun that Jason's here tonight for a couple of different reasons, because tonight's episode is called Master of Disguise. Trey, please tell me, what is the cursed item and what does it do?
It's a makeup kit, and we will find out who it used to belong to.
A makeup kit, like one of those ones on the Farrah Fawcett head? On the Farrah Fawcett
exactly. head? Exactly. A kit with makeup, with blush, I guess. I never know. Well, yeah, it's a box that holds something. We're not sure.
Maya, please tell me, what is the cursed item and what does it do? What has Uncle Lewis unleashed upon us this time around?
It is a makeup kit that can make you beautiful on the outside, but you must charge it with blood, preferably of people who just died.
What kind of makeup kit?
It looked like a theatrical makeup kit. It looks pretty old, and we're going to learn who it belonged to, and they were a stage actor.
That is key to this. It's not just your Maybelline. It's not a caboodle.
No.
It's not the CoverGirl Maybelline. No. It is a stage makeup kit. It's the roar of the grease paint, the smell of the crowd, all that good stuff. Okay. So this episode is so chock full of prolific, fabulous people. We're going to be here all night. But starting off the roster, do you know who this was directed by?
Tom McLaughlin.
Tom McLaughlin. Trey, who is Tom McLaughlin?
He directed Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives.
I know Jason Lives because he's in the chat right now.
Yeah, he is.
Jason, we're so glad you're alive.
Which is probably the most competently directed of the Friday the 13th movies by a country mile.
Them's fighting words, but okay. It's my least favorite. Yeah. What I think is fabulous, he was nominated for an Emmy in 1976 for Van Dyke and Company and one of those variety show specials about Dick Van Dyke.
Oh,
okay.
He also wrote and directed one of my favorite movies, One Dark Night, one of my favorite comedy specials, Stephen Baggs Home Entertainment Center. He directed Sometimes They Come Back, the Stephen King TV movie, and he's written and directed for Friday the 13th, The Game, and that Never Hike Alone thing. And he wrote and directed two future episodes of Friday the 13th, the series, including actually technically three, because one's a two-parter, The Playhouse and The Prophecies Part 1 and Part 2. That's when we're getting into the end times, kids. Yep. Like, big stakes episodes. Okay, yeah, so he's written, and he is our director. And our writer we have met before as well. The writer is Bruce Martin. Bruce Martin is a Scottish dude. He only wrote like 10 things, but he also wrote the episode What a Mother Wouldn't Do.
I love that.
Yeah, and one coming up called Better Off Dead. Ricky's mom doesn't explode in that one. She might. I don't know. Walk me through, kids. Walk me through our first kill. Where are we? What's going on? Who's going to die and how?
We're on a movie set.
We sure are. Hollywood comes to America, damn.
40s or 50s movie?
It's supposed to be very old Hollywood, very glam. They're wearing vintage outfits. They're on vintage style sets. There's a bright dramatic lighting, and we have a prima donna movie star who is very upset about something.
Tanya, she's upset because the star of the movie isn't there. They've been there for 6 hours, and he hasn't bothered to show up.
Which is fair. That's a fair.
It's a good reason to be upset.
I've been here for 6 hours, Sandy. Now, where the hell is he?
Look, what do you want me to say? He's William Pratt.
How am I supposed to make a movie when my leading man is never here?
Please, Tanya, just go to your dressing room, relax. He'll be here.
Sure. Maybe in the meantime, you geniuses can figure out a way to shoot the picture without him.
It's also very expensive to hold up everyone's labor.
Maybe in the meantime, you guys can figure out a way to shoot the picture without him. I loved her. I love Tanya.
I did too.
Tanya's raging the whole movie, and rightly so. Tanya is played by a lovely woman named Chappelle Jeff. She was in the original Dead Zone, the movie, with David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
She did several episodes of the X-Files, and she was in the movie The Butterfly Effect. She played the psychic in that.
Nice. Okay. Good for her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on a movie set. Big deal.
So there's these two extras, and they're basically shooting a shutdown for the day. Everyone's leaving. One of them asks the other one, hey, let's go out with us.
The grips say they're all going to some bar, as if the grips actually talk to background. Oh, and the other thing that killed me, they're like, easiest $125 I've ever made, which shows that they haven't increased the pay rate for background in 30 years.
Yeah.
Nope. Nope, nope, nope. Same. The star hasn't shown up. They figure they can't shoot anymore, so they're shutting down for the day. And what happens? That's okay. That's very scary.
So one of the extras ends up by herself, leaving the stage all alone.
She forgot her purse or something, which she foolishly brought to set. That's why you die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this whole episode is noir, which I liked. So it's very shadowy.
I wouldn't say it was noir, but I would. Okay, noir. Sorry, I got excited. Well, I cut you off.
Okay,
my bad.
So she's, then they're in the shadows, something's coming, and a huge spotlight falls and hits her in the head on the ground, and it was actually a pretty cool death scene.
Well, we attack her a couple times first. Like, she gets threatened with a giant fan. He finally throws her purse on the ground. She thinks she's going to make it, and then he throws the light at her.
Not even that. He throws
gnarly.
She goes to get that purse, and he lassos her leg with one of the light cables.
That's right.
Yeah, I know.
He's terrorizing her first.
That is hazardous.
That's one of the things I wrote down. I said, this is one of those things I was so excited to see. I'm like, people don't know how dangerous movie sets and backstage theaters are. They are death traps.
It's people whose job to go, don't step on this. It's right here. I need you to know this cable is here.
Live wire. And by the way, it won't be there in 5 minutes. It will be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Things are always moving, always changing. The things I love, there's some things I love. And I know this is just me being a jerk because I know how movies go. When they say, okay, we're wrapping the day, and everybody just leaves and the set's immediately empty. I'm like, no, honey. No.
No, it takes so long. Oh, Jason wants us to know that there were Pet Sematary 2 vibes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I didn't make that connection. That's good. Yeah, it did.
Oh, but no, those grips that you're going to be meeting at the bar, you'll see them in 6 hours after the actors go home, because that's how it is every day. The crew is there like 3 hours before you get there, and they're there for hours after you leave. So you're never sitting hanging out with them. But hey, whatever. We don't know that. That's fine. It's fine.
But her head is pulverized. It was actually... It's cheapest effects.
And there was blood pooling. And even in this like first kill, we're showing off a lot of really cool camera work. Like, we do all this voyeuristic stuff from the perspective of, we don't know who our baddie is yet, lurking, and then coming back to the perspective of the two women and going back to lurking. So like, it's really cool. And we show off a lot of neat cinematography and like Hollywood techniques this episode.
Yes.
And I would like to highlight those.
Yes, I have a few of those as well. Okay, I do want to give a shout out to these two women. I don't know who is who because the IMDb was unclear on it. Just a girl one and girl two, even though they had names. But I don't know who it is, but one of them is Lindsay Richardson. She didn't do a lot, but she was in a movie with a woman who just passed away where she was drying the glistening tear that who's that Marshall Cheek. She's one of the daughters in the Pirates of Penzance movie with Kevin Kline and Angela Lansbury.
Oh.
Shut up.
Yeah. I'm betting it was the blonde who got her head crushed. And by the way, like last time it was the Phantom of the Opera episode. This is the Beauty and the Beast episode. Like immediately it was like when that light hit the girl's head and you saw the blood pulling, I'm like, this is what was missing last time. We're missing some gnarly kills.
Yes.
One of the many things, there's many things that pop up as I go along. And one of the other things I realized was that it was missing pathos. I felt bad for this guy. And normally for Phantom of the Opera, you're supposed to feel bad for him. And I didn't feel bad for our Phantom of the Opera last time.
I think that's right on.
I've got some thoughts on that when we get to it later. But yeah, they definitely made a certain few choices that I like.
So we've got this difficult Hollywood actor in town, and they're making a movie. And how does that involve curious goods? What are they going to do, sell them antiques?
They're renting them some props. And Roby has on a whole bunch of white outfits. And
wait,
when she's packing,
they have a job? They have a job? Yes. To do work?
Someone's got to pay rent on curious goods.
They talked about it, too, about how they could get some money from this. I'm like, how do you get money? I guess this is how.
She's just like dreamily wrapping candlesticks and then
dressed
Ryan
to the nines to go to a movie set. Yeah.
Oh, she's yes. got a oh, different yeah. structured tight white dress that's got this like built up bustier in it, and it's amazing, and her hair is teased out and it looks amazing. And Ryan is like, you are drooling over this movie star guy. She's mm-hmm. like, I want to watch him act. And he's like, you are drooling. Please stop.
You're drooling.
Well, I just can't believe we're actually working on a William Pratt picture.
Yeah. And this rental contract's going to make a big difference in our bank account.
Well, it could be the start of a whole new business for us.
Come on, you guys. He's one of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
Not to mention one of the most handsome.
Romantic.
Rich.
Famous.
Yummy. Mm.
So he's rich and handsome and talented. I'm much more interested in how he works as an actor.
Give us a break, Mickey. You're just like every other woman in this country. Daydreaming about him. Drooling over him.
I am not. Well, I'm not drooling.
Okay, well, I gotta say is that the first thing I saw was like Jack. I was so happy to see Jack. I was like, Jack's back. I mean, maybe he was in the last episode. I don't know.
He was.
It feels like he's gone half the time.
Yeah.
You never know.
I'm an adult. Oh, you're here.
Okay.
Yay.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Because I got worried because in the same shot, I realized that Ryan's dressing like a teenager again this episode. So I'm like, oh, fuck.
And the writing is going to bring us right back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so Jack, I was happy to see Jack too.
This establishing shot of curious goods, and I was thinking they should do like a Bob's Burgers thing and every episode have a different storefront next to them.
I said this early on. I want to see a show about the hardware store that lives next door. What goes on? What is happening over there? Did you see what she's wearing? Yeah.
The reason they don't worry about it is because Chris is leaking through the hardware store and people are getting like saws that are cutting
storage.
Them off.
Then maybe it's like next to the iron sealed vault.
There's a door in the back that goes to the hardware store, and they're just selling everything. Yep. It's so magical. But that's why they never run out of room.
Or no, Vita has to work at Home Depot now.
Or the curses are leaking from the antiques to all the power tools they have there.
There you go.
Oh, so I'd watch that. Mm. Well, yeah, that's just going to bring us right back around to the mulcher.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
But when they were talking about the star, this the man who's, you know, Mickey's all...
He's gorgeous. A hunky, gawk over. Available.
Yummy.
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 Jack said he was
so
yummy.
Handsome. Jack, like, oh, he's yummy. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yummy.
One of the smart things I thought about this episode, too, was that we keep hearing about this leading man who is supposed to be one of the most attractive men in the world, the most available men in the world. And as Ryan says, every woman in this country is drooling over him, whatever country this is.
We have a couple hits on America Town this episode.
Yes.
I have them written down.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah. But we don't see his face for 14 minutes.
Oh, I got that.
No, I got that.
And
when he's first on screen at all, he's in the shadows.
In the shadows.
The face reveal is really
it's
built
so
up.
So good.
Too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I wanted to say the one thing I liked a lot was that, okay, so Mickey's all, you know, oh, I love him. And so Ryan and Jack are teasing, like, he's so talented. He's so smart. He's so clever. He's so yummy. And then she just kind of looks at him. Like, yeah. But the three of them have a really good chemistry in this scene. I was like, they have a really nice, easy chemistry together at this point.
It's familial.
I wrote that down, too. Like, there's, like, in the first season, there was so much, they would spar at each other, but there was a meanness to it. But now it's playful, and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally, last season, if somebody even suggested that Mickey was drooling, she would have gotten offended, but she didn't. She laughed and threw something at him. Yeah.
They enjoy being with each other, and they're like riffing on each other. And I was like, this is nice. They have a nice little chemistry together.
Well, it's about to be ruined. So.
Sure is.
Okay. So they go to the set to drop off the props and what happened.
Well, first.
We meet a movie star.
No. We meet Todd. I want to talk about Todd for a minute. Just the PA.
Take it away, Trey.
PA with a wife beater.
I think it's the first AD, but...
Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, first AD with a wife beater and like the flannel.
Oh, and the shorts shoulders. The flannel. Todd, would be Jason Blicker. Jason Blicker has over 175 credits. Jason Blicker works like a motherfucker.
I looked him up.
Jason, yeah. Jason, I recognize him because... I don't recognize him from anything. I've seen him in tons of stuff. Like he was a regular on the RoboCop series. He was a regular on the FX series. He was in Superstar with
Molly Shannon.
Yeah, Molly Shannon. Thank you. I was going to smell my. I was putting down my notebook to smell my fingers.
No, he worked for me. Warehouse, he worked for me. He
Warehouse 13 Hannibal. He yeah, he's adorable. He's adorable, and he's still working. He's on. He just did something on Umbrella Academy.
Good for him. Yeah. Oh, then I saw him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about Todd for a minute.
Well, if you liked him, he'll be back. He's going to be in an episode called Coven of Darkness. Yes.
Oh,
okay,
good.
Cool.
Is he wearing a wife beater?
I don't know. But I know him because one of his first films was the film adaptation of the play As Is, which was one of the AIDS plays that was running in the early 80s with one of the Carradine, but Robert Carradine's in it. And I did that play in college. It was my first play. That's where that was my coming out story. When somebody asked me at a Q&A if I was gay, and I was like, yeah. So I reckon, I'm like, yeah, I know him. But no, he's adorable. And he looks like he's from another movie. He looks like he's from an 80s sex comedy, and I don't care.
He does.
He does. I felt like the wife beater was out of place, but I was like, I don't know. Your shoulders look great, dude.
Yeah.
Go to town.
He had kind of an Italian look to him.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he's Jewish. Normally he's playing rabbis. Almost all of his roles are rabbis.
Oh, no, but there's the cultural agreement between the Jews and the Italians about who's allowed to play whom.
Absolutely. And they all talk with their hands. So... Yeah. And then they know guilt and they know food. I can say that because I grew up on Long Island. If you grow up on Long Island, you're automatically Irish, Italian, and Jewish just from the air. You pick up all the cultures because they're all mixed together. But no, he's great. But yeah, he's on set. He's on set with the wife beater and flip-flops. I'm like, flip-flops on a movie set?
Closed-toed shoes, my dude.
Mm-mm. But anyway, I don't care. I don't care. He's adorable and he's very sweet. I like him.
But we have the star comes in, and like you said, it's very specific, but not showing his face.
He walks in from the shadows. He moves to a different shadow. He sits down on the edge of the bed, and you still don't see his face.
And the best part of it is watching Roby watch him.
Watch him.
Oh, my God.
And this, you were talking about filmmaking elements. If you watch the scene again, you will notice that Roby has
the zoom in effect we do?
I have that down.
Zoom in, zoom out?
I had that. Yes. I had that, but specifically throughout this whole scene, Roby's hair has its own special light.
Yes,
she's got a golden glow around her head the whole time. Nobody else has that light. And she looks gorgeous. She looks like an angel.
Well, I mean, so we see him and he's handsome. And then he looks at her and she's walking in just slow motion.
Time back stops.
It was like a shampoo commercial. Just she's walking.
It's,
and it's
organic.
Just,
it's herbalescence. Well,
Jay falls in love every time he lather, risens, and repeats.
It was a very cinematic, intentionally cinematic shot, almost meta.
Yeah, yeah. And since everyone else is in darks and scrubs, she just pops.
Which, this episode, for me, is a film noir. And that's one of the things that made me think about it. And we'll get later with the costumes.
Maya's doing her half scrunchy face.
Noir has more components.
I know,
than
I know,
that.
I know, I know.
I think there's a golden age Hollywood.
This is their version of noir. This is their version of noir.
This is Canadian noir.
Canadian noir. Well, I've got a few things to leave.
Patrick, say noir like your Roby.
No. She probably pronounce it right because it's French.
Noir. Noir?
She would do a head pop. She would do a head pop.
She would turn to at least two syllables, maybe three.
I think there's at least three in there.
Yes.
Since we stopped, I wanted to just give a shout out to the guy who plays Sandy, the director of the movie.
Yeah.
He is an actor born in Khartoum.
Oh,
okay.
In Sudan, yeah. But he a Genie Award nominee for the TV series Family Viewing. He was in Billy Madison. He was in Pontypool. He was in... something that's called My Babysitter's a Vampire, which sounds fabulous. It was a TV series. He's in Possessor, David Cronenberg's son, Murdoch Mysteries, and he was a recurring character on Kim's Convenience.
Good for him.
Good for him. He was the garlic man on Kim's Convenience, if anyone remembers that. So
it's been in the queue. I just haven't gotten there yet.
He was hard to understand, but every now and then I'd catch a line. I'm like, that was really funny. When he's like, why did she have to die on my set?
What's with the cops?
Why are they still here?
They said they'd be finished before we start shooting.
Why did you have to die on my set? My insurance is already through the roof. What the
hell was she doing there anyway?
She was in there. I don't know what she...
Look, he's shooting. Listen, Todd, I want you to sit on Pratt. Right. Lose one more day, I'm going to hit him with a lawsuit that will curl his hair.
Lawsuit. Okay, gotcha.
Uh-oh, here comes the dragon lady now.
Well, is our wonder boy playing hooky again?
No, no, no. My darling, he's getting ready for you now. Come, I was just going to look at the rushes. You look phenomenal.
He was good.
He's going to kill me. No, he was excellent. He was excellent. It was just that, like, Soussaint of asshole of, like, he's trying to keep it all together, but the human value is gone.
Yeah. And I also like, too, that they really showed, granted, the struggles on this movie set are extreme, but I thought, okay, I'm going on a sidebar. The movie that was out recently, Don't Worry, Darling, all the leaking about the shit going on backstage, that shit goes on in every movie set.
Every movie set.
There's always fighting. There's always like every day on every set this goes on. And there's always somebody who winds up getting cut out of the movie. Always. This happens. So anyway, but it just showed how stressful this is. It's 18 hours of this. This is what movie is.
Oh, the thing I really appreciated was how sad the crafty table was. I was like, oh, this is real. No good snacks for anybody.
But at the same time, I was so happy because, man, this movie is lush. They spared no expense on these costumes. Everything looks great. And it gave an opportunity for lots of men in tuxes. You guys have your headshots. Yes. Headshots as props. You've got them right there. When they find things immediately in the book, you have that thing. I have men in tuxes. That's my thing. I'm going, oh, and it's a movie set. So he might be walking off set and he like might start to take off the tie and like unbutton it, and then I'm done.
Ooh, a loosened bow tie. I love one of those.
I said, I love the tux, but when the tux starts to unravel, it's even hotter. Okay, I'm back now. Calm daddy down. But yeah, so they're trying to shoot this scene, and what happens with Tanya, his female star, who's been pissed off and just this whole time, it's like, oh, is Mr. Wonderful going to show up to set today? He's here. Let's shoot. So they shoot.
So they're supposed to shoot this fight scene.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not even the right scene because no.
That's the second scene though, right?
That's the second scene. Sorry. I'm sorry. Let me back up because that's the scene where he comes in and there's just a girl in bed. He seduces this girl.
Oh, and he's just like, she won't actually kiss him back. So she keeps leaning back with her mouth open while he kisses her shoulder. It's such a weird Hollywood thing.
I almost didn't look her up because she didn't have any lines. And I'm glad that I did because we've met her before.
Who is it?
She was in Dr. Jack. Remember when Dr. Jack went out looking to charge his little razor thingy and he almost got the sex worker at the phone booth?
Yeah.
That was her. Candy Jennings.
She's only allowed to be sexy in this show. Nothing else.
Well, you know what? Because she's a dancer. All of her other credits are dancers. She was a dancer in the movie Killer Party, Dre.
Hey.
She was a dancer, backup dancer for Liza Minnelli in Stepping Out the Movie.
Well, okay.
Snaps up to Candy Jennings. she don't need no lines. She'll just fan kick her way out of any scene. Anyway. So yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's this scene. He just comes in and seduces this woman. And this is when you're seeing Roby watching him. And she's lost.
She's got a bad.
It's magic. It's a magic little scene. And you still haven't seen his face.
No. And when she does see him, you do that cinematic thing where it's like, you know, zoom in on her or pan into her and zoom out behind her. Like,
you have to be on a dolly. The dolly moves away while the camera's zooming in. So it changes the background while it zooms in on the face. They do it in Jaws.
And in Return,
I think it's famously from Jaws.
And Return of the Living Dead, does that scene. Yeah, it looks like you're moving in, but the background's going the opposite direction. It's very disorienting. And I love it. It's great. And why did they have to put a camera on Vita to make this work? A dolly? I'll leave now.
Yeah. Vita's got to run really fast, but she keeps it level. She's a pro.
Yeah.
Hiss in the hallway. That's a fix that in post.
Well, that sound guy's not going to like that.
Well, he's not her real daddy. So he never will be.
My goodness.
So I have this meet cute. And what I like, the meet cute is a jump scare. He surprises her from behind. He's like, excuse me. And she goes, drops.
Hello. I'm Bill Pratt.
I'm Mickey Foster.
Hi, Ryan Dalian.
You're an actress.
No, I'm just renting props to your movie.
Then you'll be around for a while.
Mr. Pratt, we're ready for your close-up police and Foster gear, easy to see.
I hope we can talk later.
And you finally see him. And what brilliant casting on this part. The actor playing the role of the actor, William Pratt. His name is John Bolger. John Bolger is soap opera legend. Pick one.
Oh, that track.
He's been on them. He just finished a 3-year stint on Guiding Light. and went straight from to this. So he's got his fan base. So this was perfect casting. But no, he has been in, he did 6 years on General Hospital, played the mayor who became the president. He was
my God.
One Life to Live for 4 years, Another World for 3 years. Loving, remember Loving? That lasted for like 2 minutes. He was on that for a year. But he's also been on Monsters, all the Law and Orders. And I worked with him actually on the Black Donnellys. I was in an episode of the Black Donnellys, which was a one season show that got canceled after six episodes. But yeah,
I remember the Black Donnellys.
Yeah, I was seen with him. It was in the 70s at an OTB, like Smokey and Brown. I don't remember. Sure. But anyway, it's cool. Ding dong, Patrick from the future here. I was so excited about this detail that I found out about this episode star, John Bulger, that I completely forgot to talk about it when it was time for the show. John Bulger, one of his first acting roles was in the 1985 drama Parting Glasses, which was the world's first movie ever about the AIDS crisis. And he played a gay man in a movie about the AIDS crisis at a time where you did not do that. That was a career-ending thing to do. So he's a bit of a gay icon. I don't know if he's actually gay himself, but those of us who remember the movie respect him, and we love him, and we think he's fabulous. So thank you, John Bulger, for that. And back to the show. But no, he's perfect casting, and I like
it. He's so good.
He's perfect, and he carries a lot of nuance in this role. And, like, I don't love the writing in this episode, but I think he does as much as you could possibly do with what he's given. I think he keeps it really grounded while being, like, very handsome in that old Hollywood, like, glancing off his cheekbones way.
And he brings the character humanity, which you need.
Mm-hmm. Which you, in this. You need.
Yes.
Because the thing is, he's all right. I don't want to go scene by scene because we'll be here all night. But
yes, we will.
He basically comes in and sweeps Roby off her feet immediately. And the thing is, this guy's so good. You're going, I actually believe you. I want to believe you.
Well, the whole thing was, I was thinking, I was like, is he setting Roby up as a victim or not? Like, how honest is this? And that kind of that tension really drove the episode for me.
But then cut to that face with the big eyes. And he would just be drinking her in, and not in a threatening way. This is the little subtle thing. Trey, we're going to teach you something.
Yeah.
When you do that eye thing and where you're connecting with the eyes and you have your chin up a little bit, that's aggressive. When you have it down, that's submissive. The way they have that dinner scene by the river, he's looking at her the way she looked at him at the beginning. Yeah. They are just.
It's just adoration. There's no challenge there. He wants to be loved by her. His entire thing is rooted in this vulnerability that we learn more about and how he got sucked into this curse. But like knowing he was murdering people, I still found myself rooting for him in these weird moments. And that was, I think, like my favorite through line in the episode. And that I have monster sympathy issues. I think everyone knows that. But like I wanted it to work out. I wanted his issues to even out and then maybe we'd be okay.
And I was never sure though, is he plotting to kill her or not? Like, I was always like, how worried should I be?
Nah, baby, PTSD. Yes.
Yeah. But that was good though. Cause I mean, this was the episode where for the most part, the main characters' lives were not in danger. And that was an interesting feel to this.
Yeah.
I mean, we have Ryan freaking out the entire time because he starts with his guarded. Any man who asks you out is looking for something. Nah, nah, nah. You shouldn't go out with that movie star. And I'm like, oh, we're not doing the season one jealousy stuff again, are we?
No.
I hated that.
After he sweeps her up off her feet, he gets in a fight with Tanya and is like, you know what? Let's replace Tanya with this girl.
I was so wild.
And if he was planning to kill her, he wouldn't associate with her so publicly on his
Exactly. Set. Yeah. But first we got to talk about the Gotham call this.
Yeah, we will.
Oh,
we will.
Yes, okay.
We'll get there. I just want to get through this bit, but just because so the most of the movie is all of a sudden Roby being thrust into the limelight of this movie and the Hollywood world and the Hollywood life and all of a sudden just being enveloped in it, and it's I want to go with her. I just like, I want this to work out for her. And here's the thing. When Ryan was like, I don't trust this guy. I don't think you should go out with him. You can't seriously be considering this. And I just wanted Roby to turn around and be like, I was dead 2 episodes ago. Okay. I was dead.
Let me have this.
Thank you.
Well, and say what we all about Roby. She sold this episode because it's a ridiculous concept.
She's so vulnerable. And exactly. Present. And the way we started the episode, I was worried we were going to play it very teenage crush. And it was just sincere, and she just decided to be open to something that she thought was real, and that's what kept me emotionally in the episode.
And I know this is a fantasy that Hollywood loves to project, this whole thing that you can just find somebody off the street and
you
plop them
discovered.
In a movie. But that's okay, because this whole episode is about that Hollywood dream.
Yeah.
About that falseness. So I'm all for that. And I loved it. And this is great. We discovered that gay people live in America Town.
We found a gay guy.
Yeah.
He's queer. I don't know if he's the only one, Mom.
He's here. He's queer. Oh, he's dead.
But he was here. He was here and he was clearly gay.
And he played it straight for his television job, continuing with your point about this episode's all about that fakeness.
Yeah. And then he has the first time we meet him, he's in he has broken into Will's
trailer.
Yeah. I'm sorry, his motorhome. They have motorhomes. I thought it was cute. Yeah, he just wants the story, because this guy, the whole thing with William Pratt is that he's the biggest man in Hollywood right now and everybody loves him, and everything he touches turns to gold.
No one heard of you 3 years ago. You were unheard of. Oh, I have some of his lines written down. What's your big secret? Will's like, you don't know anything. Then who is JWB?
Very attractive woman. Somebody I should know about?
How'd you get in here?
Well, it's good to see you too, Bill.
I would have you arrested for breaking and entering.
Why so hostile? I'm an honest reporter. Your fans want to know more about you.
I have got nothing to say to you.
Now, what is the big secret about your past, Bill? I mean, nobody knows anything about the man behind the fame.
It's no mystery, Geary. I just like my privacy. Now get out!
Up until 3 years ago, no one had ever heard of William Pratt. Then suddenly you're big box office. All right. You won't give me an exclusive interview. I'll just have to go on the air with what I already know.
You don't know anything. Security!
Just one more question. Why would a gorgeous hunk like you go by the name of William Pratt? After all, that was the...
Because it's my name.
Really? Then who is JWB?
Out.
Talking about the makeup kit. Look at the makeup kit. Oh, JWB.
The monogram on the cursed makeup kit.
Why would a handsome hunk like you pick a boring name like William Pratt? But even then, he played it straight, because that's something you would say as a gossip columnist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only like on his home turf in his hotel room where, oh my God, the flames.
The purse falls out of his mouth.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. High heels. High heels came right out there.
I'll deal with you later. I'm about to be on. And then he gets into a bubble bath and I'm like, you jack it while you watch yourself on television, sir.
Bubble bath. Bubble bath.
He calls someone, Howie, me.
I'm the only person who calls you. I'm the only important person.
I'm playing the audio because that was so funny.
Howie, me. I want a 5-minute segment ready to go on William Pratt for tomorrow.
Howie, me. Because I heard the italics and I heard the me. But even before, like this, the second he popped up in this scene, like they cut to him and he's standing there in his silk robe and he's on the phone. Just the way he was curling the phone wire, I'm like, he's gay.
He's gay. He's
great choice.
He's waving the flags around.
Oh, so fun. And okay, that actor is Aaron Schwartz. Remember a couple of episodes ago, we mentioned And Now the News was written by Richard Bonner. And I told you that Richard Bonner had directed in 1978 this gay movie that everybody has forgotten about called Outrageous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron Schwartz is in Outrageous. He's one of the club owners that the drag owner is trying, drag performers trying to get a job at.
How exciting.
And cool. I've since learned now that I've seen the movie that my friend Richard, who I did Summerstock with in Allenbury, Pennsylvania, is also in that movie as the drag queen who does the Karen Black impersonation in Airport 75 and trying to land the plane in the drag bar. Richard, while I was in Summerstock, we did the show Plain and Fancy, which was that Amish musical that we talked
Your
about.
Penitite outfit.
My Penitite outfit.
Yeah.
Full circle. But also, he was in Suspect with Cher. He was in, he did 3 seasons on a show called Check It Out, which was just on before this. He went straight from that to this. And currently he's on something called My 90-Year-Old Roomie. Oh, and he's still working. He's got a horror movie coming out called Purgatory Jack, where he's playing somebody called, it looks like Mr. Nose, but that can't be right. Ding dong, Patrick from the future again. He plays Mr. Noose, not Mr. Nose, Mr. Noose. I was close, but no cigar. Back to the show. Ding dong.
Cool.
But what I like about the character is he's very obviously gay, but I never felt it was offensive. Like, no one was treating him horribly. No one reacted to him. It was just, he was campy.
He wasn't playing it for laughs, that like derogatory way, you know?
Yeah.
No.
Like, there was no, like, I'm doing the gay left for television. It was, yeah. It was just, he's comfortable now. His whole self is out.
And yeah. I just, yes. And this, and a busboy arrives with a delivery. And I just love, he's like, I'm going to get naked in my room. I don't care. You're nobody.
Yeah, I'll tip you later. Right now, I'm going to be on television.
But the way he said, he's like, I told you I'd tip you later.
Who is it? Howie, better make that 10 minutes. Bye. I'm in. I'll take care of you later. I'm on.
As in, we have an agreement with this hotel and the bus boys.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, we do.
Okay, so what happens? So he gets champagne in a bubble bath. Good for him.
He does, but the bus boy turns out to maybe not be a bus boy and throws his television in his bubble bath, and he gets electrocuted.
Here, I told you I'd tip you later.
Today she resides in a...
Get out of here, I said. You lose your job for this. Get...
We have one timely phone call.
What are you doing?
In 3 years...
What do you want? Get out of here.
Phone call has never...
This is not funny. Get out of here now.
Now, you may find that acceptable behavior.
What do you want here? Get out.
But I find that shocking.
Shocking.
And then on the way out, we have a lovely visual of a champagne flute full of his blood.
I like that. That was a nice shot.
That's right, because that's what he needs. That's what he collect the
you collect the blood to give it to the makeup kit.
You have to feed the makeup kit the actual blood.
Yeah. Into the makeup kit.
In the practical effect, that's really cool. Where we have to play the film backwards, where we're doing a bladder inside the box, and we have to play that record backwards and get it to. Yeah, make it look like it's seeping into the box instead of vice versa.
That was a very cool.
I loved all the practical stuff.
They can't afford to do things like that. It's so much cheaper to just get a cursed makeup kit.
I mean, actually, yes. But, you know, replacing all your cast gets expensive after a while.
But you have one.
That's when they call them extras, Maya.
They call
them
extras. They call us background, Patrick.
He did it, but he had one line though, real quick. That he said, "Dad is a cat," or was talking about something, and he just wrote, "And Dad is a cat."
You all know this star, but what you don't know is that he dumped his wife 7 years ago, the same wife who is now in a mental home. Yes, Dale Miles has made himself a household name, playing the dad everybody wishes they'd had on Not Bad for Dad. Wouldn't it just break your heart to learn that the man who's always home when his TV wife and kids need him most never had time for the little lady who kept the home fires burning in his real life abode.
Turns out that your favorite TV dad is
not the best.
Your TV dad is a kid. And his name is Ted. Okay,
oh, this is awesome. That cracked me up.
I really enjoyed him. I was sad to see him go so fast.
Yeah, but you know, he made his... Hey, he's our first gay, first definite gay.
First definite confirmed gay.
And I can't be mad that they killed him, because it's Friday the 13th, the series, people die.
Equality.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Equality.
Equal opportunity murder victims.
And I think this is when we get Roby being co-opted into being in the movie.
Yeah, the next scene is when we come back to Tanya, who... They're having some fight in the shadows, and they do the fake out where you think it's the actors fighting, but really, we were shooting a scene for the movie.
You understand. You've been doing some investigating, right, Doc? Think you know all about me?
Let go. Let go. You're hurting me.
This is nothing. You tell anybody what you've learned, and I'll show you what real hurting is.
Oh, stop it. Stop it! What the hell?
Okay, cut. Let's reset for take 28.
Oh, what'd they do?
You son of a... You are really squeezing my neck.
I was trying to help your acting.
We're doing the where's the line on what's real, what's fake. It's no I banda, silencio. Like,
I want to talk about Tanya. I love Tanya too.
Oh, she was so good. He's like, has his hand on her neck or something. He starts squeezing really hard, and she gets...
Stop. And she's like, excuse me, you were actually squeezing my neck. That is not safety. That is not what we rehearsed. That is not what the fight captain told you to do.
That's what gets her fired, because she stood up for herself. But what I loved about her is that, again, with the duality, when she's on screen, she's got this rich voice. When she's talking to herself in the mirror, she's got this rich, cultured Shakespearean voice. Tanya Roberts' performance as Desdemona was a milestone in the American theater. Knock, knock, knock. What?
Criticize my acting when you win one of these, Mr. Pratt. Tanya Sloane's Ophelia will be remembered as a milestone in the American theater. Top that one, pretty boy.
What?
She looked at her... Her not a Tony.
Oh, yeah. I've got one of these.
I thought it was one of those cat statues from the 70s with the long necks. I'm sure Trey knows what I'm talking about.
It's got the happy and sad faces on it.
I know, but initially I'm like, oh, it's a deformed cat statue. Oh, no, it's a major award.
Everything is cats with you, Patrick.
I don't know what. Cats and jellyfish.
I was admiring your shirt. It's very nice.
Jellyfish.
So is it a rule that in TV shows and movies, whenever your actor has an award, it has to have those the happy, sad, the chaos, or the happy, sad?
You can't show one of the real awards because they charge money for that.
And you have to let people know what it is. Yeah, I mean, you have to play to the stupid people. And also, when you're an actor, Maya will back me up on this. When people find out you're an actor, every fucking gift that you get from like relatives has some sort of the fucking happy, sad faces on them. Has everything. They know nothing. I'll add it to yet another shelf of these crappy plastic music boxes that play the Phantom of the Opera theme.
I know what I'm getting y'all for Christmas.
I will murder you. I will come to your home, your new home, and murder you in front of your dog.
Did you see what just happened? Trey, did you see what just happened? This was a visual thing. You said that. I gave you a grim smile. And Maya frowned, and we were the faces.
Unleash the Maya.
We had the faces for you. That's funny.
But what is so okay, back to episode though, is that so she's gone and they have to do this scene. He's like, let's just use
Mickey.
They happen to have a backup of the leading lady dress that fits Mickey, and they're like, oh, well, her hair is perfect. We won't even need the wig. They're like, the wig was your idea, William.
Sandor, I got a great idea. Look, just bear with me. She should play Tanya's role.
What?
Are you crazy?
Look at her hair. You don't even have to put a wig on her.
Bill, the wig was your idea.
It's going to take Tanya an hour or two to cool off, right? What have you got to lose?
Oh, Mr. Pratt, I really don't think...
Are you nuts? The studio would have me deported.
In the time we are wasting talking about this, we could have done it. If you don't like it, don't print it.
You're going to drive me to the motion picture home. Todd!
Yes, sir. Get this girl over to makeup and wardrobe. See if we have something her size.
Serious.
You can do it. I know you can.
Okay, since we're here and we stopped talking about Tanya, we can talk about we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about when we kill her.
Oh, I'm
we'll talk
sorry.
About when we kill her.
We'll have to get
but,
up
because that's later. But since we're here, I love the makeup lady. This show knows how
I
to
love
do
love the makeup lady.
This show knows how to do makeup ladies. This is like the third makeup lady. I'm like, you get this right every time. Makeup ladies know everything that goes on.
They do. They do. They have all the gossip because the actors complain to them.
And if they love you, they love you. And if they hate you, you're fucked. Because you will go on looking ugly.
You've got the bones, honey. Give me good bones. I can do anything.
Can you do anything for butterflies?
Don't worry. Pratt believes in you. That's all that counts.
Is he always so charming?
I've never seen him come on to anyone the way he has to you. I've been on every picture he's made, and I can tell you, honey, that man is an iceberg.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. You must have something very special.
Oh. I'll take that as a compliment.
Mm-hmm. Makeup artists have gotten me everywhere in the world. When I was trying to catch a train, the makeup artist made something up. They're like, oh, well, Maya's getting the lines on her face from the COVID mask. Could she shoot first in front of the other people on the call sheet? And production's like, yeah, okay. They get you everywhere in the world. They know how everything goes.
Joanne, the makeup artist, was played by... Hmm? Joyce Gordon, she was in Stay Tuned with John Ritter. She was in that show RoboRoach. She starred Kathy. It was an animated series that starred Kathy from the Double Exposure episode, Ryan's dead girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. Love her.
She was in Puppets That Kill with our villain Colin Fox, the one that he won the Genie Award for. She did voices for Tales of the Crypt Keeper. She was on Babar with Chris Wiggins.
Wow.
She was the voice of a Care Bear. She was in Police Academy. And she was also in Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, which is one of the movies with Raul Julia that they make fun of. Mystery Science Theater. Yeah.
Mystery Science.
And we'll meet her again. She's the mom in Crippled Inside, which is, again, one of the most controversial and shocking episodes of the show, which is coming up in season 3.
Sure. Okay.
Oh, cool.
But she's fabulous. Like in the eight lines that she have, I'm like, I got this whole character immediately.
No, her vibes are so good. She's like, you got good bones. You bring me the bones, I can do anything with your face. And Mickey's like, so this guy picks up all the girls. And the makeup lady's like, no.
She said something cryptic. I'm going to say exactly what she said. I've never seen him come on to anyone the way he's come on to you.
She also says, actors all have their quirks. What's his quirk? You wanna talk about it a little more?
Mr. Pratt, you're looking a little shiny. You could use a touch-up.
Sure, I'll take care of it. Thank you, Joanne.
I thought you did everybody's makeup.
Everybody except Mr. Pratt.
Isn't that unusual?
Not really. He's got his own makeup case. Says it's his good luck charm.
Good luck charm?
Never lets anybody come near it. All actors have their quirks. Excuse me, hon. I gotta get back to the set.
Yeah, I've gotta get back to work, too.
Well, that's when she mentions that he does his own makeup.
I mean, men's makeup is a lot easier. Mostly, they just gotta not be shiny.
You know how you not be shiny? You know, what do you do to not be shiny? You don't sweat, Trey. You move to Illinois.
Actors don't sweat. We never sweat. Not on ourselves, not on other actors, not on costumes when we get in trouble. We don't sweat on nothing.
No, we have to have people come up with little bottles and spray sweat on us. Or put gelatin sweat on us, because that's fun.
Oh, I did a clothing ad when I first moved to New York where it was supposed to be a whole bunch of women mobbing a rock star, and the makeup artist would come around with a spray bottle like I have for my cat.
Yeah.
Spray us in the face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did one of those coming out. I did one of those extra things where I was coming out of the rain. So yes, I'm well. go throw another bucket of water on him. But I got wet pay. There's a thing called wet pay, kids.
Only if you're union. In my clothing ad, I did not get wet pay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, where were we?
We were going to bash Tanya to death with her own stage award.
Oh.
What a way to go.
It was gnarly. The sound effect was icky.
Yeah.
It's true. You're the only one who can make me look good.
You're damn right. You need me. Just try making this picture of that redheaded bimbo.
Don't talk about Diana like that. You are nothing but a cheap imitation. Nice reading, Tanya. Sincere, heartfelt. You deserve an award for it.
And that was just like one hit. That's all it took.
It took several.
Okay.
He hit her down on the ground.
One to get her down, and then the double tap, stay dead.
You're right.
But that shot, when he hits her in the face with that thing, is brutal.
The violence is real this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were working with a good fight choreographer. I'm like, that was awful what happened. And
they stepped up their game.
And the fire between them is great too. Like she has every right to be furious. The episode wants us to hate her. Because she's mean, but she's right. She is totally like, she's like, fuck this. I'm calling my agent. I am suing all of you.
I'm supposed to be in this movie. They pull this random person from props to take over my role. I have a contract.
Yeah. Contract. Yep. Thank you. Unbreakable. I'm going to shut this shit down. So she's got to go. And I love that. She's just sitting in her trailer, looking in her mirror, talking to herself how great she is.
Yeah.
Desdemona was a milestone in the American theater. America, where we are now.
That's where we are. That is where we are.
America Town.
Except we're not. Except we're not. We get confused where we are.
Well, we're going to show a city skyline pretty soon.
You get where a city skyline, but we're also going to La Scala.
There's my cab. I'm going to go to La Scala and enjoy myself. And I really don't give a damn whether you like it or not.
Is La Scala a real place?
La Scala is one of the most famous Italian restaurants in Beverly Hills.
Where are we?
Okay.
We might have gotten on a jet and flown.
Yeah, yeah. He's just such a big movie star that we...
But yeah, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. La Scala is also like the best pizzeria in Commack, Long Island, because we used to go there after our shows in high school.
Well there you go.
We're going to
Commack, Mickey. Hey, let's go. They made a good Sicilian. What can I say? I like pizza. I like Sicilian. It's square. Doesn't
it
flop.
It could be a square. You know, I was
like bisexual
getting
hair. Doesn't flop.
Very Patrick Bateman vibes from Mr. Pratt on and off this episode. When he got upset with the director, when he got upset with Tanya, we got very into the, you listen to Huey Lewis in the news. Like, the
That would have been okay fake. Then. I mean, that wouldn't have been weird. Yeah.
That version of fake of the I'm the movie star. And I get what I want because it's not what we see with him when he's with Mickey. And it's not what we see when he's murdering people. It's this additional layer he has of, no, this is how this has to work.
Yeah. And he's one of the movie stars that actually has that power because I'm guessing that's also one of the things the kit gives you, that you're irresistible. People can't say no to you or something like that. That doesn't just make you handsome.
People are drawn to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I gave it away. But we'll come back to that because they don't know her secret yet. If they haven't seen the episode, that he's not who he says he is or what he looks like. Like, we're not getting his true face at all. But I wanted, before we go there, because Mickey doesn't know, we'll get there when we get there. We're getting clues throughout. Trey gave one earlier. Tanya gets thrown off the set and he comes over and say, look, we can use her. We can use that girl right there. Look, we won't want to use the red wig. And the director says, the red wig was your idea.
Why would he want a red wig, perhaps? Huh.
Because there's another redhead that used to be in his life who's not there anymore.
A redheaded bimbo. Sorry, Mickey is the redheaded bimbo.
There are many redheaded bimbos. It's okay. I'm sure. No bimbo. Diana Lamb went off to the hideaway cabins with a strange man.
Oh,
she was no
murder lake
angel
and we can't
either.
Decide if we're doing a slasher or what. I got a little frustrated by where this episode went.
Yeah,
I didn't mind that because a lot of this stuff is just so like old Hollywood Babylon stuff. Like you hear shit like movie sets just being deplorable and like dangerous places.
Okay, but that's why I said this had a throwback feel to it the entire time. That's why I kept saying noir, because even to the fact that Roby at one point is wearing the sunglasses, like cat eye sunglasses, and the big scarf around her head.
Oh my god, Hollywood and noir aren't the same thing. I think it's very old Hollywood.
Okay, you're right.
They are styling her like she's an old movie star. I have notes about the exact same, the sunglasses and the scarf and all of it together, and the convertible they're driving. It's very late 50s.
Yes.
Very, very, very.
Okay, you're right.
Oh gosh, what's her name? Gosh, I can't think of her name. Oh. She's Law and Order SVU, the star.
Mariska Hargitay,
her mom.
Jane Mansfield.
Jane Mansfield. That's what I was getting the vibe of her in the
100%.
Car. But with a head. Poor woman. Anyway, I want to come back to that scene. But since we're at the date, and I love that we saw the Toronto skyline. I love that. That made me happy. And something was throwing me off about the scene. Not in a bad way, but going, something's different. Why does this feel different? How many times have I mentioned during the course of our doing this podcast, mentioning how black the sky is all the time?
A lot.
Sky for this, the night sky is blue. It's never happened before.
Yeah, it's reflecting
gorgeous.
On
and
the water. Right. It's so pretty.
This dinner scene is beautiful. The skyline in the back, and then just having this outside. They're supposed to go to La Scala, but he takes her to a private table set up by the river.
He just wants to spend time
gorgeous.
With her.
This whole scene is gorgeous, and he is the way he talks to her, like his eyes never move from her, but not in a creepy way. It's like I can't take my eyes off of you. It's not like I'm forcing my eyes upon her. It's like there's nothing else in the world right now but you, Mickey Foster.
Right.
And I'm falling for it.
I'm falling for it too. And it's just like, I want to be with someone who sees me for who I really am. And like she tries to fish for the information around that, and he just like deflects, it rolls off.
It's just like being in the movies.
We'll put it in our movie. I'm sorry about today.
Oh, no, no, don't worry. I understand. I mean, she does have a contract.
Yeah. Here's to our dreams.
So, do you treat every girl like this on the first date?
No. I was waiting for you.
Well, gosh, this is what stardom is all about. I could learn to like it.
It does have its advantages, yes.
But there also must be a price to pay. I mean, privacy.
Let's just say I had enough privacy to last a lifetime when I was a nobody.
What, are you telling me you couldn't get a date?
Let's just say I've waited a long time to find someone who would see me for what I am inside.
But what's his movie idea? He wants to do a movie. He's always dreamed of making a movie.
Oh, he wants to do Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, but that's been done a million times. Why do that again?
His is going to be different. There was something where he's not going to change or something.
You want to know what I've always dreamed of doing?
What?
The story of Beauty and the Beast. Except in my version, when Beauty kisses the Beast, he doesn't change. You see, Beauty loves the Beast for what he is, not what he looks like.
Right. Love overcomes everything.
Yes. Everyone's so obsessed with physical beauty. I just hate the way some people get shut out simply because they don't look right.
Sounds like a wonderful story.
To my leading lady, in the movies and hopefully in life.
When Beauty kisses the Beast, he doesn't change because she loves him the way he is right now.
Yeah.
That's Shrek.
I know, but Shrek didn't exist at the time.
This was before Shrek.
By a long margin.
But she changed, though. She got ugly.
So. No, she was beautiful. She took love's true form. You take it back.
Okay, I don't remember.
So maybe he actually got his movie made, but of course, Hollywood being Hollywood, it got turned into Shrek. Shrek is really his movie.
You know, that's how it works with those elite Hollywood monsters. They were literal, and we took it as a metaphor.
But I did write, Jack is doing his own investigation.
One more note about dinner. Mickey brings up, but surely with your Hollywood career, there must be a price to pay. That's it. Just throwing little breadcrumbs in there.
But what I like is that, so Jack's doing his own investigation, and I swear to God, this guy knows every person in Americatown. He's like that person who's always running into, hey, Jack, how you doing? Oh, Steve, it's been forever. And he meets the security guard.
Hollywood agent.
His old agent.
Hollywood agent. Sorry.
Hey, I'm Sal.
That's right.
You still doing magic tricks? I'll do anything there's got a market for you. You want a job? I could probably get you a job. And he talks so fast.
Oh, I haven't seen you since your wife died. another member of the Widows. Like, does he know any women? Yes, Trey, he knows everybody in Americatown with a penis. He doesn't know any women. His friends are male.
They don't
have wives.
Spider webs on it.
Let it please be him. Oh, dear God, it must be him or I must die. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great. But what I thought was fun, too, there is a scene early on where Wiki's going out on the date. She's excited and looks gorgeous. New white dress.
So many white outfits. The scoop.
That's all she's been wearing this season. I don't mind. I don't mind that we have like a more grown up fashion Mickey this season.
So many outfits and no suitcase, though. And this all happens in like 48 hours. Whatever.
As true.
Canadian clothes fold really small.
Oh, I didn't know. That's my bad. She hides them in her hair.
Like the Harlem Globetrotters cartoon. But anyway, but there's the scene where she's going she's going out and Ryan's like,
Mickey, I don't think you should go.
Why not?
I don't know. I just think it'd be a mistake.
Why?
This guy's William Pratt. He can go out with any woman in the world. Why would he go out with you?
Thank you.
I didn't mean it that way. I just don't think you should go out with a guy until we find out a little bit more about him.
Ryan, please don't tell me how to live my life.
There's something about him, Mickey. Do you know that every one of his films someone dies accidentally? I've been checking.
In the manifest.
No, he's not in the manifest.
Oh, what a surprise. Ryan, this might come as a great shock to you, but he's a lot nicer than most people, present company included.
Oh, you've been looking him up? You've been looking him up in the register? Did you find him? No. And I'm going, but he's there. He's right there. He's right there.
You're going to put your finger at his name in about 20 seconds.
But then Jack came in the next scene. He's like, no, it's right there.
There's something about him, Jack. I feel it.
Is he listed? You have anything to go on at all?
No. Wait a minute. Pratt does his own makeup. He's got a makeup kit that's some kind of a Lucky Charm or something.
Makeup kit? I've seen something like that. Ah, there. Makeup case once owned by John Wilkes Booth.
The actor who shot Lincoln.
Hmm.
What did he sell it to?
Jeff Amory, no address.
God damn it, Ryan's back to being an idiot.
But to be fair, it was under a different name.
It was under a different name.
It wasn't sold to William Pratt. Right. It was sold to somebody named Jeff Amory. And it turns out that's who William Pratt was. Before 3 years ago, somebody named Jeff Amory. Tell me about Jeff Amory.
Jeff Amory was a hunchback with a severe facial disfigurement. And he had this one friend, and she was a beautiful redhead. Maybe they were lovers.
Actress.
We don't know.
Redhead actress.
And then she went out with another man up at Murder Lake, whatever it was. Green Lake? My notes all say Murder Lake, because I'm a diligent note taker.
Murder Lake is fine.
She went up to Murder Lake with her new boyfriend.
The hideaway cabins is the important part. The hideaway cabins.
Wearing a Crystal Lake hat. I can't remember the name of the lake. I have no object permanence. She goes up there with a new boyfriend.
She went up to Ricky Lake. She went up to Ricky Lake.
Oh, God.
She goes up to Murder Lake with a new boyfriend, and Amory's heartbroken, comes up there, and Sal is telling the story in the fast talk and Hollywood agent way, kills the guy with an axe. Just enormous smile on his face.
Like he's pitching a plot to a movie, which I thought was great.
She threw herself off a cliff. The next day, they find Amory.
No, what he said was, and then this broad goes and runs
herself off a cliff. And then the next day, they find him with his arms wrapped around her, which is the ending to The Hunchback of Notre Dame. We call him a hunchback, and then you find Quasimodo, his corpse is found wrapped around Esmeralda's bones. So it's like, what? What story are we doing, guys?
Well, we're actually doing the story of Rondo Hatton.
Rondo Hatton?
Jeff Amory was based on the real-life actor Rondo Hatton. Because you left something out of the story. Why doesn't this girl love Jeff Amory? What's wrong with Jeff Amory?
He's got a facial disfigurement.
And I didn't leave that out. I mentioned that along with his hunchbackedness.
Well, then you weren't interesting enough for me.
Oh, then fighting words.
Scrunch that face up.
Run, Jason, run. get out now.
He's not in trouble. No, you're in trouble.
I know. I'm deflecting. Rondo Hatton was an actor. He was a reporter and an actor. And he when he was in high school. I have pictures. Oh, wait, you know what? Hold on. Let me do a screen share.
So
I've got a picture
from
right here.
Complaining about how implausible the story is when it's based on something that happened.
Yep, I was waiting for that. Surprise, surprise. Well, isn't that one of your favorite Star Wars things? The It's a Trap thing? I'm making a Star Wars.
Fine. It's not my favorite.
Not Star Trek.
We're Team Star Trek. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
A star, it's a war, it's a trek, whatever. Hold on. Just talk about yourselves for a second.
Okay, wars and trek are so different. One's a space opera. It's basically like a friggin' Western and Star Trek.
Well, that's Rondo Hatton.
Oh, wow.
Rondo Hatton, as you can see, he was voted the most handsome man in his high school.
In his high school senior picture, he looks like he's 27.
Well, it's 1910. What do you want? Because he was
aged.
He graduated from high school and went off to fight in World War I. When he was in World War I, he was hit with mustard gas.
Oh.
When he got back from war after recuperating, all of a sudden he developed the disease that Lurch has.
Yo.
Okay.
Ding dong, Patrick from the future again. The word that Patrick from the past is trying to think of, the name of the disease is acromegaly. Acromegaly. Ding dong. Back to the show. He was a reporter and he also was trying to be an actor. And then his face just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And somebody said, I know, let's cast him in horror movies. And he was in a whole bunch of stuff with Bela Lugosi, playing creepers and hunchbacks and murderers. And he died of a heart attack at like 49. I can't think of what it's called.
Agamemnon.
Yeah. So that's it. And he was the sweetest guy on the face of the planet, apparently. I've read some of his articles, very smart, very well written, and just.
So we're going to be inspired by this story and paint him as a murderer instead.
That's what he's remembered as, unfortunately. Sure. Nobody remembers his reporting. They remember the Creeper Returns and Revenge of the Dragon, Spider-Woman with Gail Sundegod, one of my favorite actors, a Sherlock Holmes movie. But yeah, okay, so that's based on a real thing.
Okay.
So it turns out that is exactly what's going on with William Pratt. William Pratt is horribly deformed. And what would you say that William Pratt wants more than anything else in the world?
To be loved.
To be loved.
Yes.
Jeff Amory. Amore.
Oh, so and if he's Jeff and if we go French, it could be Je.
Or if it's Spanish, he's boss.
Love boss.
Boss love.
Love boss.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So yeah, so that's the real story of that. I don't know why they went with John Wilkes Booth.
That was so weird.
Because I would have thought that since the name of this episode is Master of Disguise, they would have gone with Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
The Man of a Thousand Faces. Except
I guess
we just did Phantom of the Opera.
We just did Phantom of the Opera. I think there is an in here because John Wilkes Booth wanted to be a better actor because his brother was regarded as a much better actor. I do think it is difficult, though, because wouldn't you want to choose an actor who was loved, did a good job?
Well, or I guess it's cursed because it belonged to an actor who tried to kill the president.
Did.
And then maybe the curse played a part in that. Oh, yeah. You're sorry. Yeah. But maybe the curse
every
was
now
a
and
part
then
of
a madman
assassination.
Goes
I've been doing such a good job not singing Assassins. I've been doing such a good job.
Yeah.
Maybe
they're also kind of implying that maybe the curse played a part in Lincoln's death.
I think that's what they're going for here is that the curse didn't work out for John Wilkes Booth and it's not going to work out for you. The country is not what it was.
But they do have it. So finally, him and Mickey go back to his place.
Oh yeah, we have the steamiest sex scene we have had on this show.
I know.
This is how you shoot a sex scene, guy who did the last episode.
That was, it was a high.
I felt
like,
holy a little
shit,
uncomfortable.
Like, should
I be
the Red Shoe Diaries?
Like,
yes. Yeah.
Oh boy.
It was hot. I mean, because they're both into each other and we know that they're both into each other and that made it okay as opposed to last time where it felt gross and rapey for me.
He was into her.
No,
I mean, it was.
Roby is into what she thinks she's getting.
Yes. Well, yeah.
I would still say there's a lie of omission going on here that would affect consent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
right.
With the information that is available, they are both very into it.
And as far as he knows, he can sustain this forever because, all right, we've seen this curse before or variations on this curse before. This is very much the cup of time curse.
Yes.
Except that made her young. This makes him
pretty
attractive and irresistible. Yeah. Yeah. But like always, there's a ticking timer that keeps getting shorter.
It keeps getting shorter. And they wake up the next morning and he's starting to get a boil on his face. And he's terrified that she won't love him anymore. And you can see it's all based around that insecurity. That's not a mastermind. He's, oh God, I have to fix this. And they do some more gnarly special effects. It's pulsing.
Yes.
You know what it made me think of, Trey? It made me think of the OG John Waters Hairspray where Amber gets the pimple. Ah, a horrible blemish!
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
Look, we need Debbie Harry to come in and squeeze that thing for like 4 hours.
You know, I think the musical would have been better served by a bomb, but here we are.
A hair bomb, but yeah.
Excuse me, I wasn't specific enough.
A Debbie Harry hair bomb, which her hair is explosive, by the way. I don't know that. He didn't have to kill anybody. That was just, he just needed a quick reapply. So he was able to reapply and come out and be like, aha, I have this funny allergy.
It happens sometimes. Don't even worry about it. Hey, you want to go up to my like cool cabin and we could take a weekend off. Have a good time. Just the two of us.
Yeah. Because at this point, the movie's been scrapped. It's been wrapped. Like the Tanya's trailer blew up and like, we can't.
Oh yeah. Post-murder. He blew up the trailer. We paid for pyrotechnics. It looks really good.
So we're paying for pyrotechnics, great gore, great stunt violence, great special effects, and everything was great. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, and fabulous costumes. All those gowns are lush.
Gowns, they all fit really well.
Even the ones in the extras.
Beautiful gowns.
Very skinny,
beautiful
they
gowns.
All like her shape. They move well. Yes.
Then we have Jack and Ryan walking into Curious Goods about, we haven't seen Mickey in 24 hours.
Left us a message.
I'm just like... You're in the middle of, I mean, at this point, are they actively, I guess they're looking for the makeup box, but they're just like,
they
were looking for Pratt.
They're looking for Jeff Emery. Jeff Emery.
He's not at his house. He's not on the set.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're still looking for the guy who bought the box, which is why we're seeing them investigate because it's late in the episode that he goes to see the agent. Because it's
not
about
them. But
they
don't seem too concerned that she's gone. They're like, she's missed them.
No, he doesn't. And normally it's opposite. Normally Jack's like, I'm the adult. This is serious. And this time Ryan's like, something's wrong. I can feel it. I don't know what it is.
She's getting laid, Ryan. That's what it is.
But he's right, though.
subconsciously. Yeah, he's right. But yeah, it was just kind of funny that Jack seems very like, oh, now they don't care if she's gone for 24 hours. Like, she'll turn out.
It's like, it's so quiet in here. The quiet. Enjoy the quiet. Everybody just.
There's no hairspray.
Oh, well, one part I thought, I have to say, no, when they figure out there is a makeup kit and it's in the register and they have a name, all of a sudden, Jack took out this other gigantic book and flopped it down and started flipping through it. I'm like, oh my God, what's that? Oh my God, it's the phone book. Oh my God, remember the white pages? Oh my God.
I remember that.
Once upon a time, you had a 50,000 page book of everybody's phone number.
Once upon a time. Yep.
But only with the head of the household listed. If you're trying to find, never mind. It was terrible times. 30,000 trees had to die to print every phone book, and we got one every 6 months.
And the smell musty.
Always. I had that decaying paper smell. Excuse me.
There was that excitement, just like Steve Martin. The new phone books here. I'm back now. Let's get six friends to lug it into the house.
But like eventually we get all the dangerous pieces together. The movie is shut down. They want to go on a weekend away.
Oh. They're taking a weekend away. But since we brought this up before, I have to bring this up now because I have to address something that happened last time as well. We're talking about the scene where they're driving to this cabin where Mickey is dolled out in this Hollywood thing. And it should be hilarious and corny, but it's not. She looks great.
I loved
she
it.
Looks she amazing. Totally,
I love that look.
She's lost in the fairy tale right now. And I love that. They stop for gas. Yes.
They both are lost in the fairy tale. They're both lost in it.
They're both lost in it. They stop for gas.
The gas station.
And she gets out of the car. She's walking around. Now, Trey, last time I mentioned something that I talked about Mickey's outfit. And I mentioned that she was wearing clam diggers. And I realized when I listened back to the episode that you thought I was making a comment about her camel toe. That is what those pants are called, Trey. They're called capri pants. They're called clam diggers. They're called pedal pushers.
Capris are called clam diggers because the ocean's not going to get on your pants.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that. And they also were clam diggers.
But, I had to make sure that I was not spreading misinformation and that I was not commenting on Mickey's camel toe.
Thank you.
I was talking about an actual item of clothing that is called clam diggers. And what else did I teach you about clam diggers last time? What else? What nugget did I give you? What did I say about people who wear clam diggers? Who?
Their whores?
Who did? No. I said, I said that I learned very early on that people who wear clam diggers all think they're Jackie Onassis. Look at her in this. Look at her in this scene. She's totally Jackie Onassis.
Yes.
Not Jackie Kennedy. No. Jackie Onassis.
The rich one.
Oh, yeah. She's married to the oil baron now in these scenes. And she's loving everything. I love the scene at the gas station, too. It should have been a blow-off scene, and it's not.
No.
I got something to say about that.
I was confused because I felt like we were doing the last stop off before we all go to the cabin where we get murdered. Like, this felt like part of a slasher movie to me, and I got confused.
No, there's one line in here that crystallized the character for me completely. They're at the gas station. They find this really cute gas station attendant. The guy has to go to the bathroom because he's starting to kind of boil out again. And wrote Mickey's like, what could be taking him so long? And the gas station is like, oh, that's the famous movie actor. I'll go check him for you. I'll ask for an autograph. And he goes in there. He's knocking on the bathroom door, and you see Pitt, in there with his big pulsing boil. And then he says to himself, please don't make me do this.
That was nice.
Yeah. He said that while looking in the busted up dented
the mirror. All refracted. Yeah.
It's all fucked up. So it's fucking up his face, even though it's not completely fucked up yet. What I thought all that was great. It's this disgusting bathroom, of course. Oh, it's a gas station bathroom. But what I thought, this was horrible. This poor little gay kid who's still got a crush on this guy. It's like, oh my God, it's the first sex man I've ever seen in my whole life. Oh God, because we're off in wherever.
Murder Lake.
We're going to pass Marge's inn, that was just down the yard, down the way piece.
Tell them Large Marge sent you.
Not that one. I meant Marge from Scarecrow. But
I know.
But the poor kid's checking on him in the bathroom. I'm like, Mickey, maybe he's just pooping. Let the man poop.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the poor kid's opening and he sticks his head in the door and you're actually hearing the squishing of the pulsating things.
Sir. Go away.
Mr. Pratt, are you all right in there?
It's icky.
You can't see him. But also, if I'm walking into the bathroom and I hear that noise,
I'm good. Close the door and run.
Oh, sorry.
He's fine. He's fine.
But here's the way. And this show, I don't know if it's intentional, but it's kind of subverted itself because I'm always used to the villains being despicable, pretty much evil. And this time I was like thinking something's wrong with this. And then when he said that, I'm like, oh, he's one of the very few villains who doesn't want to do what he's doing. And that kind of changed it all for me.
We murder that kid and I was anticipating something else. So when Roby comes to check on me, drops his little makeup pot and the glass breaks. And I'm ready for him to murder Mickey in a violent rage for taking his fabulous object away. And we don't do that at all. He doesn't yell at her. He doesn't call her stupid or whatever. It's just, okay, look, I'm all better now. Were we going somewhere? Let's go do that.
Bill!
No. Oh, no.
Bill? I'm sorry. I was just getting worried.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Did you see that kid? He was looking for your autograph.
Yeah. He must have took off. Probably went to sell it.
And yeah. We've had little clues. They're very small, and I didn't really notice them until like the second or third time through. There's a point when he's talking to Tanya in her trailer before he kills her. He's like, listen, Diana's going to be great in this role.
Who's Diana, buddy? Yep.
And when Ryan goes to investigate his trailer, he finds a picture that looks like Mickey, but it's not Mickey. Like, yeah. the picture is subtly
spinning
not Mickey.
Image, but not Mickey, because also we can't develop photos that fast, because once upon a time, you had to take your film to a store.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's a couple of times in this drive, he calls her Diana before they get to the cabin. So he's starting to crack.
Yeah. Yep.
The fantasy is cracking on several different levels, and watching them try to hold together is actually heartbreaking. And this whole last scene is wonderful. The scene at the cabin is not at all where I expected it was going to go.
No, not at all. I and surprise, he doesn't die. They don't kill the villain. Which have they ever had an episode where the villain lives?
Yes, Mary, the first one, the little girl.
Okay, but still, I mean,
it's rare.
The villain. This is the most compassion they've ever given to one of their villains.
Yes.
This was a very compassionate, I mean, he's a killer, but it had a lot of empathy for him. Same. I like that.
I have to admit, I choked up a bit during this last scene. He's heartbreaking. What's happening?
So
they got to the cabin, and what happened?
She comes in from the car, I think, and he's hiding. He's crouched down on the ground doing a lot of really difficult. Everything's dark, 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 all those pretty blues we set up earlier in the episode. And he's like talking to himself, crouching on the floor. And we start throwing around all that like honeymoon phase, lovey-dovey. Well, I love you for you. I love you for the way you are. It's okay. Are you hurt? Can I help you?
Just let me hold you.
Stay away, Diana, please.
Who's Diana? What's going on?
I can't get with him. But he doesn't love you, I do.
I can't see you, Bill. Where are you?
He's gone.
Why are you doing this? Why? I
thought he was so perfect. He loved him because of the way he looked.
No, I love you for what you are.
I don't know who I am. Diana. Diana, I'm afraid for us.
It's all right. There's no reason to be afraid. Just let me hold you.
No, stay away. If you see me now, you'll leave me.
No, I'll never do that. Never.
Diana. It's me, Jeff.
Jeff
Amory.
Stop it. Stop hiding. Let me see you.
You said there's nothing to be afraid of, Diana. You said you wanted to hold me.
Let me go.
Why do you want to go? You lied to me. You said you loved me. You said you loved me!
Yeah.
And he finally stands up and turns around, and we see how disfigured his face is. And we learn he's not mentally all there, and it's just this like manic want of, no, I need you to love me. No, do you still love me like this? Yeah. And we as the audience know this is how the previous redhead died.
You made me old. You made me think that I could love someone and be loved for what I am inside. And then you gave me here. Why then?
Please. Whoever she was
whatever she did was hers.
But you... It's too late now. You'll never love me.
And we have to watch Mickey try to survive it. So I found this really squicky, which I guess means it was very effective, but I like having fun watching this show, and this scene, because it was effective, I was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, because he's going to kill her. He's like, you don't love me. You can't love me. You looked at me and you screamed, you don't love me. Like, he didn't give her a chance either. Like,
to warm up to, this is how my face normally looks. Is this something you can work
with?
Yeah,
I mean, even if it was just a completely different face that was not a deformed face, it would still be a shock. It gives her no time.
If we're having some kind of like battle with a cursed scalpel, I'm like rooting for people. I'm like, violence, yay, this is fun. And just watching this broken man plead for love and watching Mickey try to survive, I was just like, oh, this is not fun now. I'm not having fun.
He goes to kill her. He's strangling her, and she just says, I love you, Jeff.
Yeah.
That's not enough, though. Then kiss me.
Kiss me.
And
the shot was so beautifully lit.
And
this is why you think Noir is a beautiful backlit shot in the window. Ah.
Yeah. A little bit of that. Yeah, just.
It needed more key lights across the eyes to be.
Need the Morticia special.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she does
kiss
him.
She wants to live, man.
Yeah.
And he just breaks, and it's awful. It's beautiful, but it's awful. It's the movie that he wanted. He kissed the girl and didn't change, and she still loves him.
Beauty and the Beast.
And when Jack and Ryan burst in to save the day.
You're just sitting on the floor crying.
And just holding the back of the hand going, no, I got this. It's okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's heartbreaking.
This was a subversive episode.
Yeah.
I mean, the ending was almost anticlimactic, but it didn't
not where we normally
end
go.
The way I ever expected.
Not where we normally go, because everybody's world ended. Everybody's like, her dream shatters, his dream shatters. Everybody's life sucks. It's terrible. It's awful. Brian's just like, I got my girlfriend back that I'm related to.
And I was right. And I was right.
And the final scene is lovely, too.
Yeah, a little aftercare scene where she's just like so sad to have lost this thing that gave her hope.
That was a very brave thing that you did, Mickey.
What's going to happen to him now?
They'll put him someplace where he'll never get out again.
Why am I crying for him anyway? He's a murderer.
Maybe because you saw him. I mean, really saw him.
Jack, he was so alone. All he wanted was to be loved for who he was, not what he looked like.
I think we all have a little bit of that in us.
Maybe that's why he chose such a simple name as William Pratt.
We learn, like Trey mentioned, that they don't kill him, that he's in an institution and they're not going to let him out this time, but he won't be able to hurt anyone else. And
Jack knows everyone.
He knows a guy.
Well, he talks about how the name he picked.
Oh, yeah. He once met someone who was famous for playing all kinds of monsters, but was the kindest person. And what was his name? Boris Karloff. And what was Boris Karloff's real name? William Pratt.
Maybe that's why he chose such a simple name as William Pratt.
No, Mickey, I think that was something else. I once met a great actor who made his name by playing monsters and ghouls, and yet he was the gentlest, he was the kindest man I ever met.
Who?
Boris Karloff. But his real name was William Pratt.
And then Boris Karloff one day would write Dracula.
And we hung out a lot, and Boris Karloff was also a little gay around the edges, so...
She sure was.
But Jack had to drop in there. Oh, I knew Boris Karloff.
I mean, of the famous actors I know who play monsters, that's extremely true. They're the nicest damn people.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I turn to this series for fun. I either get good horror or I get camp. And this was somewhere in the middle where it wasn't what I wanted.
See, I started off not liking this because, like, oh God, it's another romance episode. I don't want to see two straight people
not
fall
again,
for each other.
Man.
Not again. But
then we got a bubble bath and everything was okay.
Bubble bath.
We got a big queen in a bubble bath.
But Mickey was surprisingly bare. I mean, usually she's a little extra. But in this episode, she sold it. And so did he. I think they both did a great job. Yeah.
Concur. Okay.
And I felt sorry for the guy, which was his. Oh, and also he kills Tony.
Todd,
wife.
No, Todd makes it out of this episode.
Okay, never mind. Okay, never mind.
He flipped his flops right the fuck out of there.
Isn't that OSHA certified? The director's out, the insurance is out. I'm out.
You're right. Okay, that's what it was. I was expecting him to kill Todd.
I got dicks to suck. Gotta go by. It was a good episode. I liked it. Yeah, I agree. It wasn't a great episode, but it was muddy. But when it hit well. And you're right. When we have these episodes that are heartbreakers, I don't know what to do with them. Just like Brain Drain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But kudos to everybody involved.
At least with Brain Drain, some of the camp of the trepanation machine, I'm just like, that's so silly. I'm still having fun. That's when I'm just like, I'm sad now.
I got the camp from the movie stuff, like the bitchy actress and the big queen. That was the campy stuff for me. It's probably not camp for us as much because it's our job.
Yeah. And I was like, no, they did it. That's as accurate as I see on television. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, good episode. Okay, celebrity casting.
I didn't make one because I was sad.
Gotta make me do all the damn work again. God damn it, you're all fired.
Oh, okay. Oh, no. Tanya. Catherine Hahn.
Oh, yes.
Wait, who?
It was Agatha.
Catherine Hahn as Tanya.
Okay.
Catherine Hahn is always a delight. She's like John Leguizamo. Anything, she just makes it better.
She's in the new Glass Onion coming out in 2 weeks.
I'm so excited for that.
I cannot wait. Patrick, one of the inspirations for Glass Onion was The Last of Sheila.
Oh. All right. Yeah. 4. William Pratt. I had a couple of thoughts. I had 3 thoughts. I only have 2 pictures, though. The first one, Bradley Cooper.
I see that.
That was the first one I got.
Oh,
then the more
Bradley
I looked
Cooper
at him, I'm like,
the Elephant Man. That would be spot on. That would be so good.
Ding, ding, ding. Mm. And then my brain went to more older Hollywood, baby George Hamilton.
Okay.
Oh, I could see that.
And
definitely.
Then when I was sitting here doing my notes, I also said, I don't have a picture of him, but John Cassavetes, Maya Farrow's husband in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Okay. Tanya. I love the duality between her, that switch between I'm high class and also I got a mouth like a truck driver. So I went for, oh gosh. Elizabeth Banks.
Oh, yes.
Always a delight. Love her.
Always
love
a delight.
Her.
Always
love
unexpected. Her. Yes. Joanne, the makeup lady. I said, okay, who is like a raspy voice, classic actress who is always the sidekick?
Is it Carol Kane?
The star? No, I went older Hollywood than that. I went all the way back to 6-time Oscar loser, Thelma Ritter.
Ooh.
Oh.
From Rear Window. And and proud out lesbian in 1940s
Amazing.
Movies. Yep. Okay.
That is the gayest possible freeze frame you have of this character. Look at that.
I knew he was gay when he's twirling the phone cord.
Twirling the phone, but he has this like slightly lopsided smirk. It's just so gay. It's so gay.
And his eyebrows are Joan Crawford.
Oh yes, they're quite manicured.
The cheekbones are popping. He's again structure. The bone mm-hmm. structure.
You got good bone.
Initially, I went with Leslie Jordan.
Yeah.
And then I decided no.
I miss him. It's hard.
I cannot accept. But I said I think I'm probably going to need him later on for a much better role. I have a feeling. So I went with Dom DeLuise.
I got Dom DeLuise vibes from him too.
Okay, yes. you know who I got from him? James Coco.
I also thought him as well. Yeah, I had already pulled the picture for James Dom Coco. DeLuise. James Coco, Murdered by Death, The Hercule Poirot.
Oh.
You're chocolate all over your face. Sloppy.
Took me a minute.
And also, yeah.
Who else we got? Mickey. I'm recasting Mickey.
Yeah.
I'm recasting Mickey because basically, okay, it was great, her story and everything, but basically it paralleled a certain movie. She just, where a woman just kind of walks into a Broadway show backstage, tells some sob story. Next thing you know, she's stealing parts from the star. All about Evil Star. Eve Harrington.
Eve Harrington.
Not the actress. Mary, whatever her name was. Eve Harrington herself, because she was an actress. Whatever. As Roby. Coming and stealing people's parts and walking off with the man. Probably going to get an Oscar if this thing had ever gotten made. Or Genie.
No Oscar, because this is Americatown. This is Americatown.
It's Americatown.
Yep.
In the American stage.
And I came up with an alternate curse for the makeup box.
Go on.
It makes you a good actor. That this guy's actually a horrible, hacky actor. But when he has the makeup on, he turns into a great actor, but only for a certain period of time. And he has to keep killing it. And then he starts to, like, voice starts to crack, starts to give bad line readings. He has to quickly kill someone so he can act.
I'm going to kill you. I fooled you. I like that. Okay. So next time. Wow, this one ran long, but that I knew it was going to because there were so many.
Oh, this is good.
There were so many intricate parts to the movie and the cast. But next time, we have three returnees coming back.
Oh.
Who do we get?
It's the Wax Magic episode. We are getting, oh God, I forgot her name, the poor wife of Bram Stoker who died in the Cape of the Vampire episode, whatever that was called. Also, Shark Mouth Vampire from that same episode, the Sharp Mouth Kimono Vampire Lady. She's back.
Yay.
And our electrocutioner is back.
Oh, wow.
I like the electrocutioner.
Now, isn't next week another romance episode?
I think so. Yes, because Ryan falls in love with the girl who works at the wax museum at the carnival.
Stop trying to date everybody, Ryan.
She works at a carnival. She's going to leave town in 3 weeks. This is a bad choice.
Disposable.
Bad choice.
Yeah. Well, Ryan's trying to, you know, take a square peg put in a round hole.
Square peg. One size does not fit all.
Not fit all.
We left Maya out this time. Yay!
I don't think they like this, but I don't think they like us. The waitresses.
Mm-hmm. It's hip to be a square.
Oh, Maya. You mentioned Carol Kane?
Yes.
Did you watch Carol Kane's new TV show?
No.
You haven't heard about the new Carol Kane's TV show?
No,
the new
show
she's going to be in? Star Trek Discovery?
I'm going to have to try to watch Discovery again.
Well, you know who's also in Discovery?
Tig Notaro.
Yes. I love Tig Notaro.
I hate Tig Notaro. I don't.
Oh, well, we can fight about that later.
She showed up on a podcast unprepared and stayed. So she's like,
I guess that's kind of her thing.
Do your homework.
That's her. She doesn't.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
You know what?
She didn't.
You know what? This is all great. This is all great and fabulous. Yeah, people got. But wait.
It's not Friday 13th. Jason has to get out of here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, Jason, did you have a good time sitting in the chat? Are you still alive? Are you still okay? Are you bored to death?
He said I did.
Yay.
I remember you could be Jason next time. Not just this show. It's all the shows. It's for Scream Queens and also. It came from the 70s. You want to come sit and hang out with us? You can do that. And that'd be fabulous. We'd love you. And you know what? I think that's it. I think I'm just going to go because I'm really tired. And you know, I want to give myself a facial before I go and also do a mask too. Just the two different things. But you know what?
I saw what you did.
Oh my God, I can't believe we got one thing left to say before I give myself a facial.
Damn you,
Uncle Lewis.